Can you hear me okay back there in the back? I'll try talking a little bit louder today. Well, I sure appreciate the offertory and the chorale selections. Those are beautiful numbers. Kind of the canon, I don't know if it's canon in D or exactly or which one it is, but reminds me of when I was at the feast, the only time that the church had a feast in Switzerland and at Lake Lucerne, and I was driving through the Alps, around through there, and I had that song on the radio, and every time I hear that song, I always reminds me of those beautiful mountains and the drive that we were taking over there at the feast at the time. But it's a beautiful song, and I appreciate the chorale and all your efforts. Brethren, back in 1940, on June 18th, Winston Churchill delivered this speech to the House of Commons in Great Britain, right before England entered World War II. These are the last few words of that speech. He says, "The Battle of France is over. I expect that the Battle of Britain is about to begin. Upon this battle depends the survival of Christianity, civilization. Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire. The whole fury and might of the enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be free and the life of the world may be moved forward into broad, uplit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was our finest hour." Very powerful speech he gave at that moment in time in history. But a year and a half later, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt delivered a similar speech to Congress on December 8th, 1941. He began by saying, "Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, at least they thought. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through the absolute victory. With the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God." Those are certainly momentous times in the history of England and the United States. You know, there are similar times that are recorded in our history in the Bible of people who were threatened with annihilation as Britain was considering, after what Hitler did to France and with the Jews. And it's found, this similar story is found in the book of Esther. As you know, the tribe of Judah was taken into captive, into slavery, into Babylon, and they remained captive there for 70 years until Babylon was conquered by the Persians. Many Jews returned to Jerusalem at that time, but many decided to stay and remain there and continue in their Jewish community. This turned out to be very risky for those who stayed, because King Ahasuerus, many of you know this story, also well known as Xerxes, we call him, and in the Bible it mentions his name as that, was the most powerful man in the world at that time. To be a reckless, extravagant, and easily manipulated character. This was especially dangerous because he had passed a law, and when he passes a law, it cannot be changed, no matter how huge the law may be and what a mistake it may be. And the Jewish people found out, as the story goes, they had a serious problem. Haman, who had been promoted to Xerxes to be over all the princes of Persia, Haman hated the Jews. He despised them. Haman came up with the plot to destroy and annihilate all of the Jews. He manipulated King Xerxes to sign a decree. Take your Bibles, if you would, please. And let's turn over and read his decree. Turn over to the book of Esther, chapter 3, verse 13. Esther, chapter 3, verse 13 says, "And the letters were sent by the couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, little children and women. And in one day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions." Sounds very similar to what Hitler was trying to accomplish back in World War II. We know now that Queen Esther was a Jew. She was a Jew, and she had been adopted, as the story goes, by Mordecai, her cousin. When she was just a small child, she was adopted. And as the story goes, you know that she was the one that was picked to be the queen of Persia. She had no power. She had no power whatsoever. In fact, her husband, the king, didn't even know that much about her being of a Jewish background. Mordecai sent a decree and a message to her, not a decree, but he sent the message to her after hearing of the decree from the king. And let's read what Mordecai's message said over in the fourth chapter of Esther. Fourth chapter, down in verse 13. It says, "Then Mordecai told them to answer Esther, 'Do not think in your heart that you will escape the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?'" For such a time as this was Esther in that position. Brethren, we know that God did place her there for that very position. He placed her there for such a time as this. And we today have also been placed here. At this time and in this place, God has placed us here and called us. God has called us now in this time to be Christians, but to live an example, to be a light to the world, to be trained God's truth, to learn his ways for the future, to do a work. There's a work that has to be done. And we, through the offering we took up today, we support that work. And in many other ways, we support the work throughout the year. But it is also a dangerous time today that we live in. Very dangerous. I know all of you saw just in the news just a couple of weeks ago where 147 students in Kenya were asked the question, after being asked this question, "Are you a Christian? Are you a Christian?" And if you said you were a Christian, you were executed. And we hear about terror and we hear about ISIS from almost every day, something going on in this world. But Mr. Arnold Hampton gave a sermon in Miami, and I'm sure he gave it up here, on the book of Esther. And he said the lesson of the book of Esther is this: God's unseen hand is guiding his people, and that he will deliver in his time. He will deliver in his time. Today, I'd like for us to look in the Bible at some examples in the Bible of God's people living through times such as this that we live in, that were even worse than we live in today, but apply the lessons of the book of Esther. Since we're here on the last day of unleavened bread today, I'd like for us to take a look at the children of Israel. You know, just like Queen Esther, Moses was living a life in that time that seemed like it would go on day after day, the same thing that he would be doing. He would be tending Jethro's, his father-in-law's, flock of sheep in Midian. For 40 years he did this. Every day he would go out and do the same thing, pretty much. But before that, we know that he did live in Pharaoh's rule for 40 years. Take your Bibles and let's turn to Exodus 3. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 2. And this is where Moses' life changed suddenly for the rest of his life. It says, "An angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire and from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush burned and with fire, but the bush was not consumed." Moses' life changed from that very moment he saw that bush burning, and he never was the same again. Yes, I know, as I said, Moses wasn't always that shepherd. He was 40 years earlier working and being raised in Pharaoh's home in Egypt. But 40 years long, he probably did, as I said, herded those sheep. Every day, the same thing. You know, God heard the cries of the children of Israel and their sorrows at that time when he came to him there at that burning bush. And he had wanted to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt, out of their poverty, their burdens that they were under the Pharaoh. And he heard their cries, and he wanted them to deliver, if we read on down through that chapter, to a land filled with milk and honey, a great land, a beautiful place. And Moses was listening to this as God's telling it to him. And he's telling this, and Moses is probably nodding his head and saying, "Yes, yes, yes, this all sounds good. It sounds wonderful. Exactly, this is what's needed for those children of Israel to be let free, to be taken free." Until he heard down in verse 10. God told Moses, "Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, and that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." And Moses probably was thinking to himself, "What? What did you just say? Wait a minute, back up just a minute here. I didn't hear that right." Verse 11, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to the Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?'" Moses was brought to that place at that time, as Esther was, for such a time as this, for that reason and that purpose. You know, remember the lesson of the book of Esther, I said, was God's unseen hand is guiding his people, and that he will deliver in his time. He will deliver in his time. That statement has three parts, three sections. The first section, God's unseen hand is guiding his people. You know, God answered all of Moses' questions that he had after he was told this about how to approach Pharaoh and the children of Israel, because they didn't know who he was. There were, I think, around a couple million of them. They didn't know who Moses was. They're not going to listen to me. All along the way, throughout the book of Exodus, we see God's unseen hand guiding Moses and the Israelites through all of those plagues, and especially guiding them and instructing them on that last Passover night when the death angel passed over. And he guided them through a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night as they were going through the wilderness, and he guided them through the Red Sea. And I believe today, the seventh day of unleavened bread, was the day they crossed through the Red Sea, this very day. God was guiding Queen Esther also along her way. You remember that after she and all the Jewish people had fasted for those 3 days, remember that she asked the people to fast for 3 days before she approached the king. God guided her not to go directly to her. You know, if you went before the king and he didn't request you, and you could be killed if he didn't extend his scepter. But let's read this in Esther. Go back over to the book of Esther. Esther chapter 5 and verse 4. It says, "Now it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace across from the king's house, while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of his house. So it was when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court that she found favor in his sight, and the king held out and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, 'What do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you, up to half of my kingdom.' So Esther answered, 'If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him.' Then the king said, 'Bring Haman quickly, that he may do as Esther has said.' So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared." Skip down to verse 8. It says here, "If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and to fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them tomorrow, and I will do as the king has said." So Haman went out that day joyful, and with a glad heart. You remember, stop there for a moment. You remember the king still didn't know Esther was a Jew at this point. And Haman didn't know that either. And neither of them know what Esther's petition was going to be. As you read the story, you'll find that this was probably one of the greatest, in today's terminology, I would say, sting operation or sting setups in the Bible. God was guiding Esther in this sting operation, I would call it, or setup. But all the time, God was guiding Esther and Mordecai through this. She could have told him the first time she saw him. She didn't. She asked they come a second time, the meal she had prepared. And as we just read, Haman was joyed and overthrilled. Yet we knew what his motives were. He hated the Jews and asked for a gallows to be even built to to hang Mordecai. The second part of Esther's lesson is God will deliver his people. God will deliver his people. Through God's guidance, the Israelites were delivered. As we know, the Israelites were delivered out of Egypt. And God, in a very miraculous way, also delivered Queen Esther from the Jews, from being massacred by their Persian enemies. We read in Esther chapter 8 that not only did the king Xerxes revoke his earlier decree to kill all the Jews after she told him, he granted that they would not be killed. But look what happens in chapter 8, verse 8. The king tells Esther and Mordecai, he says, you yourselves write a decree for the Jews. Do what you want. You can write your own decree as you please in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring, for a letter which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke. I don't know exactly what all was written in that decree, but I'm sure it was very well and good things for all the Jewish people at that time. But what about the third part? I said there were three parts to the book of Esther in lessons. The third part of the lesson is, where does that fit in? Where does that fit in with Esther? The third part where it says, God's unseen hand is guiding his people and he will deliver them, the third part, in his time. Not their time, not our time, but he said he would deliver them in his time. Those are key things that we need to remember. Psalm 27:14, you don't have to turn there, but it says, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. In God's time. You know, sometimes that wait for God is short. It was short for Esther and the Jewish people. Because God granted it, he worked it out. He was guiding and leading them and delivering them. Then the Jews were helped by God very quickly. But you know, on other times, like the children of Israel being in bondage, and it was good the first few years there, but then it became very hard in bondage with different pharaohs and very difficult for them. And it took many, many years before God decided to deliver them and hear their cries. It just didn't happen fast. And then after he delivered them, it was another 40 years before they were to go into that promised land. A very long time. You know, so far these examples I've read are very dramatic ones that involve millions of lives. The example of England and the United States deciding to enter World War II involved many millions of lives. And I believe God, to fulfill prophecy in time, had those men say those speeches at those times to fulfill prophecy for this nation and for England, Ephraim and Manasseh, the blessed nations. But for God to deliver these people, Moses coming out of that quiet life he had in the wilderness to lead about 2 million of those Israelites from the strongest nation of the earth on that time, which was Egypt. Well, what about us, brethren? What about us here today? As Mordecai said to Esther, who knows whether you have come to this place for such a time as this? You know, we've heard people say, why was I called now? Why did God call me now? Why couldn't, you know, when I grew up as a teenager, I many times was not able to go to those basketball games on Friday night, and I wasn't able to go to many of the events that were on Saturdays, and I wasn't able to be with my friends that I really wanted to be with at those times growing up in the church. And you know, it ran through my mind at those times, and I were times that I resented that I couldn't be a part of that. But God had other plans. Unseen guiding hand of God. You know, our lives may not be as dramatic as the Bible patriarchs' lives, but for us personally, sometimes it feels like it is. Some of our things in our lives can be very major. You know, when we lose a job and we have a mortgage to pay, and we have 3 children that we need to feed and a wife, it can be very, very traumatic at that time. When our country is at war, possibly, and we're called up to serve, it can be very traumatic at that time what you're going to do. Or maybe when you've been married for 60 years and you lose a mate or a spouse, or when you're sick, or even worse, when your children are sick. It can be very, very tough. You know, will we remember then the lessons of Esther? Will we remember the lessons of Esther? Will we remember that God will guide us, that God will deliver us, but in His time, in His time. God tells us that He will never leave us or forsake us. It's recorded over in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. And it's also taken from the Old Testament in Deuteronomy 31:6, which I will read. It says, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them." Who is them? Well, we know who it was back then for the children of Israel, but who is it for us? Satan's influence on us in this world is our enemy. He's the one that we have to deal with in this world that we live in. Now, I'm not saying everything in this world is bad. There's many wonderful, good things in this world, and we all enjoy many of those things. But Satan's things are the ones that we need to be aware of, that we need to watch out for. "For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you." Deuteronomy 31:6. Isaiah 41:10 says, "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Those are very comforting words from God. Even though our trials in our Christian life seem very personal to us sometimes, we are Christians at this time in this life, and we are a part of a bigger plan. We are a part not just of ourselves, but of a bigger plan, God's plan. Though we don't always clearly see it, we don't understand it, that's the unseen hand guiding us when we don't know the answer sometimes why things happen. You know, when Joseph was thrown in that well by his jealous brothers to starve to death and die, he probably didn't see the big picture. He probably didn't know why he was put in that well. In God's plan, while he was down there, and then they sold him to a passing caravan to go to Egypt. He probably didn't see anything more than slavery for himself alone in a foreign place. When Potiphar's wife was chasing after him, he most likely didn't see any plan there. And when he was forgotten in prison for years afterwards in Egypt, he didn't see any great plan there either. Why yet? Not until later in his life does Joseph finally see it and understand it. Take your Bibles and let's turn over to the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 45. Joseph finally understands. And you know, he was very high up this time. It says in verse 1 of 45, "Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father still live?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. And Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." And they came near, and he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." Skip down to verse 7. "And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." In God's time, he delivers. "So now it was not you who sent me here, but God, and he made me a father to Pharaoh and the Lord of all the house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." Joseph's purpose was revealed, and he knew why he was sent there. Last Sunday evening, I watched I don't think really a lot about a lot of these religious TV programs, but I'd seen it been advertised a lot, AD, on television, and of course it was on Easter Sunday they started airing this, and it's going to be a series for 12 weeks. And before they aired the hour-long episode of Christ's crucifixion, actually from the jury on to the, they didn't go through the whole thing, they just started midways through it. And in the pre-program, they had a special on Mark Burnett, who is a producer for many television programs, and his wife, Roman Downey, who was the star of Touched by an Angel. And I was surprised to hear what they said. They said that recently, because all of these blockbuster so-called major motion movies that had been put and produced out there were failures in the religious world today, was because they deviated from the text of the Bible. And I know some of you that have seen Noah or some of these others, they're totally off base on much of what they say. But they said they have attempted to stick to the text of the Bible in this series, which will be 12 series going after Christ's crucifixion through the book of Acts. And it looks interesting to me to see how well they will stick to the script. And I watched the first episode, and they were off a little bit here and there, but pretty much they followed the text. From what I could tell, pretty close. There were a few things that were not right, but they portrayed it pretty well, I thought. If any of you have seen Passion of the Christ, which was pretty accurate, they did a good job on this. But, you know, they portrayed in there about Peter denying Christ three times. They portrayed how the disciples were hiding out, and they were afraid. And they thought it was over with after Christ died. They thought it was over. After 3.5 years with him and Christ teaching them, immediately after he died, they kind of took the attitude of, well, Christ is gone now. Let's go back to our jobs. Let's go back to what we used to do. And that was their personal time of mourning for his death, but after that, they thought, let's go back. Even after Christ appeared to them after his resurrection, over in John 20, 21, it tells us, Christ said to them, "Peace be to you. As the Father has sent me, I also send you." He commissioned his disciples to go and preach the gospel. But you know what? It didn't happen. It didn't happen right then. Let's go over to the book of John, chapter 21. And I know probably many of you have been reading up on some of these scriptures prior to the Passover. But here in John chapter 21, verse 3, and John was with these, as well as Peter, one of the disciples, and Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. I'm going fishing. And they said to him, we're going with you. These were the other disciples. Wait a minute. This is not what you're supposed to be doing. They went out and immediately got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. And as you know, the story goes on that Christ was on the shore, and Peter jumped in the water and swam over, and they brought the boat over with the others, and they had a meal there. And Christ said to them there, you know, feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my flock. That's what he was telling them. But we find finally in the book of Luke, let's go to the book of Luke. Here in the book of Luke, chapter 24, in verse 50, it says, and he led them out as far as Bethany, and he lifted up his hands and he blessed them. The last thing he did before leaving this earth. It says, now it came to pass while he blessed them that he was parted from them and carried up into heaven. And they worshiped him, and they returned to Jerusalem with great joy. They were afraid before because they might be killed or they might be persecuted. It says, with great joy, and they were continually in the temple praising and blessing God. They were no longer afraid. And from that day forward, the disciples never stopped preaching the gospel from that time forward, the message. They finally understood God's plan. Brethren, as we move forward after we leave these days of unleavened bread, ahead in the coming year, no matter what, we know this, that we have come to this place in this time, and that God will guide us, he will deliver us, and in his time, he will do this for such a time as this.